Yeah, I will. Actually, this question goes to Ferdinand as well. The fact that there is a breach of duty by either the directors and or the reason why I'm directing this to Dave Ferg is he's an attorney like I am, and he may have some more insight into this than non-attorneys. A breach of good faith duty by either Bessie Walsh and or the board when they could have hired, when they could have stayed with, I beg your pardon, the law firm which we had hired, but instead went and hired Williams Connolly and Fulbright and other firms. Question is, that being an act of bad faith, or like a good act of bad faith, one, but then two, can we make a claim on our insurance carrier on that? But then three, was that settled in the lawsuit, in the settlement? And I'm not sure if you know that.
Well, no, I know the correct answer to every legal question, and that's it depends. And
thanks, Dave.
And it depends a lot on the details of the settlement agreement. And the law is applicable in the state of California and or Washington, D.C., depending on how they apply to the conduct. And I would have to, since I'm not getting paid, no, just kidding, I would have to defer to Dan insofar as he's consulted with attorneys on those specific questions. My understanding is that the directors were, it was settled out that the directors would not be held liable for any negligent conduct. At least that was my understanding. But I don't mean to try to, as to Bessie Walsh or other staff, I do not know.
No, I'm not going to try and get the directors. I'm saying the carrier covering the tortious behavior of the either the directors or the board directors, that is, or the staff.
Well, you get into a problem, George, where you when you allege intentional conduct on the part of an insured party, you sometimes give the insurance companies an out. Whereas, you know, they may be liable for negligent conduct in some instances. They might not be liable for intentional conduct. And it's a matter that, again, I think would require more specific analysis. And I think that John Murdoch demonstrated the dangers of a board member having a legal, taking legal action on behalf of the board. I think that, again, Dan, I don't know if you have any clarification on these issues raised by George.
I think Janice wanted to speak to this, and Carol also. Okay, not on this?
No.
Okay, Carol, did you want to speak to this?
Our new attorneys who are looking into the legal fees outstanding, Mayworm of Squire and Sanders, is looking into that issue for us, George. There may very well be... first of all, claims against the insurance company for further coverage than they have thus far provided. We know they haven't paid anything to Epstein, Becker, and Green. We need to find out why. Were the bills not submitted? Were they rejected? If so, what? Why? Those kinds of things. And then the other thing that they are looking into is how much of the legal fees incurred were on behalf of the individual directors and how much were on behalf of the foundation itself. Because the foundation is prohibited under California law for paying attorney's fees on behalf of the individual directors unless that's specifically authorized either by the court or disinterested directors, which there were none at the time, or the California Attorney General. So it may be that the law firms we'll have to eat some of that, what they were billing on behalf of the directors.
Okay. Can we actually not get too far into this, but George, you wanted to follow up on this? Okay.
First, I owe you an apology, Carol. You're what we call a baby lawyer because you're new.
I wrote the brief, George.
Okay. Newly licensed, you're bound to be licensed. They gave us some money. They gave us some money to settle the lawsuits. They were just going to go to the foundation. Was that to cover any egregious acts that were committed by board members?
We got $400,000 for damages to the foundation for any negligent acts on behalf of the foundation of the directors. We haven't collected it yet, but we're expecting it soon.
What about for intentional?
It wasn't specified. That's what we settled out. We've released them all for $400,000.
Does that include for acts of the officers?
It includes every board member who we sued. It does not include any employee. We didn't sue employees such as the executive director.
Okay. Janice had a question. Before I call on Janice, I just want to recognize that Marion Barry has also joined us, so we just want to welcome him for the proceedings. Thank you, Mary. Janice?
Okay. Dan and Verna, I have two questions. Have any parts of those golden parachute packages been paid? Have some of them been paid completely, or how does that stand?
It depends. it does depend on the various offers and the various individual cases. Some of them have been, yes, but most of them have not at this point.
Can I ask about specific people, or you would rather I didn't?
Yeah, I'd rather you didn't.
Okay, the other question is, did I understand you to say that $900,000 is the annual income from the subcarrier?
That's what we think is probably a realistic figure, an annual figure, if indeed all the leases were rented out.
I talk about subcarriers, but I don't really understand it. Could you just give a brief explanation of what that means?
Jim, do you want to respond to that? Talk about the subcarriers?
Jim, can you just introduce yourself?
Oh, okay. I'm Jim Bennett. I'm the acting general manager of KPFA, and also its operations director. The subsidiary carrier authorization is what the official title is, but it's the side frequency to the main frequency. At this particular point in time, the renting of those frequencies is not as attractive as it once was, simply because of the way that technology has changed and the way that data streams are now all over the place on the Internet and what have you. It's not the same kind of real estate that it once was for broadcasting. It's less lucrative. It's harder to actually rent out. So it really does, at this particular point, take a kind of a aggressive I won't say marketing, but an approach to get them rented out, and obviously it's pretty imperative to try to lease them because the technology is kind of on the wane in terms of its attractiveness to various different people that would want to use it. But it can be used for data streams, or it can be used for things like distributing music to supermarkets or what have you, things like that. But there's two different frequencies for each radio frequency. So if your radio station is at 94.1 FM, there's two adjacent frequencies on either side of that frequency, basically, that you can rent out.
Okay. Ray and then Teresa.
I have a question for Dan. You mentioned that there was a firm that acted apparently as a information gathering firm. Is there any way that information that they collected can be made available to us?
Well, that's in fact what I'm recommending. We don't have a lot of that information. In fact, I think we have very, very little. And in the course of the discussions with these legal firms and other firms about the payment of their bills, the question of the work products will be coming up, and we will be able to presumably obtain those work products. What I'm recommending is that we should have some kind of independent review or some kind of process about how we deal with these issues, because they're obviously very sensitive. It does raise the question of what happened in countries like Switzerland or East Germany when it was revealed that security agencies had developed all these dossiers. There could be a lot of false information, true information, who knows, but these dossiers exist and they have to be handled correctly, and we need some advice and guidance on these issues, because it is obviously, you know, very sensitive.
Okay, I think Teresa was next.
I personally would like to know who the operatives were that have been checking out on me, and I don't think we should pay them until we find out who these people are.
Carol? Carol?
I wanted to recommend that anybody who has had a dossier compiled upon them be afforded an opportunity to read it and make a decision as to what parts, if any of it, they want made public.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we, whoever the lawyers, have not seen any of the actual work product. We haven't yet gotten that from this company, from this investigative agency, and it's not clear to me that we ever will get it. They may prefer to skip out on their payment rather than turn over the work product, depending on what kind of operation they are. So, you know, I think we need to do everything we can to get those records, but we don't have them yet. David?
Yeah, I was curious whether or not there had been any inquiry of the defendant directors, certainly at least those that are still with the board, as to their knowledge about the information that was ordered by the defendants in that case. And secondly, in the event they do say, well, you don't have to pay us, we'll just keep the information, I say we sue those suckers and we get that information anyway.
Other comments?
Madam Chairperson?
Yeah, yes. Mary.
How much do these firms owe, the investigated firms?
This firm? 200-something thousand?
Well, the investigative firm is owed $215,000.
Let me just say for the record, this is one director who's on the other board that had no knowledge of this.
Right. We don't believe at this point that there was very many people who had knowledge of this.
We've got to find out what the hell was going on. I tell you that.
Right.
Exactly. Nor did I have any knowledge.
I think if I could, I think seeing from what people said and the nodding of heads, everybody on this board agrees we should find out what the hell was going on. And that's what our national staff and the lawyer that we've hired are working on, and trying to get that information so then we can figure out what to do with it. Thank you. Okay, Teresa.
Madam Chairperson.
Yeah.
Let me start it without...
Teresa over here.
Okay.
Teresa.
I think it's kind of spooky to ask the people that have been investigated to pay for the investigation that was done on them. But that isn't my question. I have two questions. One was last November in Houston, last meeting we had in Houston, there was an accounting firm, and they were talking about how they were going to update our accounting process. And it's been called to my attention that they came to the archives, broke or somehow got into the vault, and they were doing an inventory on the archives on how to make some money off of the archives. Is that true?
We're going to hear from the archives director after this section.
So maybe we can wait. Next question.
Yeah.
And maybe this has been covered. My attorney, and I'm going to trial on Tuesday for being arrested at the station, is not really interested in the political aspects of Pacific at all, but the minute he heard about decision strategies, this investigative company, he said, why don't you, his immediate thought was, this is the way attorneys work, challenge those debts as ultra vires acts. Have we discussed this possibility, or is that totally out because of the settlement?
What are ultra vires acts? Can somebody translate that?
He's acting beyond authority of the executive or the board.
I'm sorry.
Acting beyond the authority. Ultra vires.
That doesn't appear to be the case at this point. They were acting with authority, it appears.
Okay. First, I just want to point out that we are actually over time, and we know there's a lot more that has to be discussed about this, but there, you know, are several other things that need to happen tonight. So I know Marion had a question.
I'm sure person seems to me that without offering a resolution, we ought to sort of get a sense of the board that unless this company, which most of us had no knowledge of, produces a complete report, we're going to pay them a penny.
Right. what Marion is suggesting is that the sense of this board be, I don't know that we need a formal resolution. I think people agree with that, that we're not going to pay this company anything without first seeing the work product, and even with seeing it, we may not pay them.
May not pay them in.
Okay? So if we could move on, I just want to say one other thing, actually. Again, I want to thank both Dan and Verna for giving us extremely thorough reports. Just footnote. So when Verna was giving the figures on the bills from the law firms, $400,000 here, $200,000 there, you know, those are the outstanding bills. That doesn't take into account the payments that were already made to some of those law firms. So Epstein Becker Green was already paid $700,000, I believe it was. So, you know, the full picture of what was incurred in bills, some of which have been paid and some of it's still outstanding, was much greater than the figures that Verna gave us. Again, though, I very much want to thank, on behalf of the board, both Dan and Verna for those reports. Thank you. Thank you. And again, a lot of the issues that they raised will come up again throughout the weekend under various other agenda items. What we want to do now is move to a report from Brian DeShazer, who is the director of the archives. And again, we are extremely happy. I must say, I went on the national board in June of 2000, I believe, I'm sure, this is the first time, at least in that period, that the board has heard a report from the archives. So we're very happy that you could join us tonight. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, I am Brian DeShazer, and I am the archives manager. And I'd like to thank you for inviting me tonight. And as Leslie said, this is the first time that the archives has been able to see the board and the governance and the management all in one space. So I really thank you. Thank you. And I'd also like to thank you on behalf of the archive staff and anyone who has heard recordings from the archives for committing to maintain and preserve this valuable social record. The intellectual content is at times provocative, moving, challenging, joyful, tragic, thoughtful, intelligent, sometimes altogether boring, but always informative. And as varied as these voices are, Lord Bertrand Russell, the Black Panthers, Edward Teller, Pablo Neruda, Bella Abzug, Che Guevara, Madeline Murray O'Hare, James Baldwin, Germaine Greer, Malcolm X, Sister Helen Prejean, Gloria Steinem. I'll give you a second to rest on that. As varied as these voices are, the common denominator is that it was that they were on Pacifica Radio and they were free to speak their piece. And that is the thing that you've committed to preserve, and we thank you very much. Now, with that, let me say how proud I am to be here, and unfortunately, I do have some bad news, and at the end, maybe some good news. The bad news is that the most critical three things at the archive is the deterioration and the rate of deterioration of this tape stock. The earlier tape stock is acetate, the newer tape stock is mylar, which is not as good as the old acetate, so the newer materials are deteriorating faster than the old materials. To give you a clue as to how bad it is, we really don't have a formal assessment. How bad it is that 50% of the tapes that we pull for review or for copying or duplication or sent to the stations for broadcast, 50% requires up to 4 times the labor and supplies to make it a sound quality that's broadcast. What that means, what cost means, 1 hour of program tape costs between $75 and $100 to get back restored. You multiply that by 40 to 47,000 tapes. When you say, how much money do we need? That's the math. The next.
What does that come to?
I'm not the accountant. A lot. More than what the archives can, more than what the foundation can provide.
$5 million?
Yeah. Between 40 and 47,000 tapes. Right. And we still have some tapes that have not been identified, have not been cataloged. We have two off-site storage units that contain about 7,000 tapes that were sent from WBAI, WPFW, that, again, have not even been identified. There's no identifying marks on them. The good news is that as we are pulling these things and as we're cataloging and listening to them, we are finding jewels. We are finding materials from the 50s, from the 60s that had not been heard. And as the catalog database is now online and searchable and accessible to everybody, you can go in and find those updates and find these wonderful voices. The next critical part of the archives is the staffing. With the recent budget cuts, we did take a 32.5% budget cut in our staff and payroll alone since December. So the archives is at an all-time low, a skeleton crew. We have no cataloger to listen to these tapes. We have no professional archivist to manage any monies that may or may not come in. So the staffing is an issue that must be resolved very soon, whether it be through volunteerism or through organizations or institutions that can help us with that to get it at least assessed is what we need. In May, in conjunction with the American Recording, ARSC, the Association for Recorded Sound Collectors, the conference in May, Larry Applebaum from the Library of Congress has agreed to come and visit us for 2 days and give us an informal assessment and take a look at our standards. So we're really excited and very pleased that Larry Applebaum has agreed to come and give us that assessment. I think once that's done, that's when we'll know about how much money we need. And it'll give us a better idea of who we can go to get that money. We are on the fixed income, Pacifica fixed income. We receive only a certain percentage of the central services, and the rest is in donations, tape sales to the public, and services to the stations. The next critical point is funding. Again, we know we are very happy that the Archives was part of the one-day fund drive and helped it be a success by providing archival clips and gave it a real good historical perspective for the day. So we're really happy to provide those services to the station and programming to the stations in a time of need. I know in KPFT they have a problem with filling their program schedule. The Archives has done great work in providing them with some of the archival material that is broadcast quality, and it does move people to support their station. In funding, you know, where do we get this money and what is the money? Again, institutions that may fund the archive, grants from the NEH, any monies like that, the staff has to be in place before that money can be administrated. So we must, again, have a professional archivist on staff. That is a Master of Library Sciences degree person that is on staff that can administrate that money should it come in, or at least apply for that grant. So those are the bad things. That's the big bad news. The good thing is that with the new climate in Pacifica, and again, thank you, the board, for creating this new climate, this new open feeling, the atmosphere at KPFK and the archives is incredible. In the past 2 months, the archives has had more visitors than we've ever had. I was pleased today to give a tour to Jeremy Scahill and Robbie Osmond and Laura and Barbara. Thank you, Barbara Lubin. You know, and it's incredibly motivating for us to give the tour because we know that that physical collection, when you see the tangible evidence of the past 50 years, we know that that's what we need to save and what we need to really pay attention to. So as we're going for these grants, understand that the staffing has to be in there in place first. So we need money, staffing, and then money again. Okay. So the good things, you know, the good things are Larry Applebaum from the Library of Congress paying attention and actually inviting me to come to ARSC to speak and make a presentation. We're going to have a wider and broader presence at places like the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. We have a great on-air presence. Again, the one-day fund drive and the fund drives in general. The archives material has really generated a lot of interest in the archives. The website is now up. In the past 2 months, we did launch the website. It is intended to be an academic study of the collection. So when you go to the website, you can do the searches. There's a study guide. You can look at what's the most significant materials in the civil rights movement, the women's movement, Asian American issues. So we've got all those things in place. As far as funding, you know, one of our big revenue points was tape sales of Democracy Now. Thank goodness Democracy Now! Is back on the air, not only for the public, but for the archives as well. I also wanted to point out, since January, when we did launch the website, we've had 2,938 visitors. So people are listening, they are looking, and they are studying what Pacifica is. So for what I see in the future, I believe that the next 2 years is really should be about the money that we get or the money that we receive from externally should really be about development and getting the word out about the archives, what shape it is in, and then being able to go to institutions and the public for funding. And with that, I thank you again for inviting me to share the concerns of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and I hope that you may have some questions for me.
Let me also remind members of the board that tomorrow evening, after our close of the meeting, we are going to go with the board members. I'm sorry we can't invite everybody to come along with us, but the board members are going to go to the station, to KPFK, and to the archives. So people will actually have a chance not only for further discussion, but to actually see what Brian's been talking about. But if there are any questions now, it would be good to hear them.
Right.
George?
Yes. Do you, you have these tapes that are deteriorating. Do y'all burn them on a CD, something to preserve them forever? What do y'all do?
Yes, right. As of now, we are, as soon as we pull something in, it goes through a digitization process, and that is the 4 times the labor in the tape stock. It has to go, if it's bad enough, if the deterioration is bad enough, you have to put it on a separate reel-to-reel tape stock to arrest the deterioration. From there, you feed it into a computer, digitize it, pull it back out, put it on another reel-to-reel tape, and that's the restoration copy. So you've got the master, the preservation copy, the restoration copy, the CD copy, the data copy. So you've got 5 things that represent one thing, one master. So that's the problem.
Madam Chairperson?
Yes. Yes. Mary.
Reynolds, thank you for your report. I'm not technically literate in this area. When you say deterioration, you mean the sound and the quality?
A little bit of everything. There's the physical deterioration. If you look at the tape stock, it could be brittle. It could have dust on it. You can smell some vinegar on some of the old acetate tape stock as it deteriorates. And then there's also the fuzziness as you put it on, and you can hear glitches. You can hear little crackles. And that's what you have to digitize and then get the sound quality evened out and put through some more filters that really shouldn't have been able to go through at the beginning.
Are you able to, when you do all of this, bring it back up to the quality that is listening?
It depends. The mantra for tonight, it depends. It depends upon how deteriorated the tape is. You know, sometimes we can get it back 100%, sometimes we'll lose 20%.
And how did you arrive at the $75 to $100?
If those four tapes, preservation copy, the restoration copy, the two CD copies, you add those costs together, plus about 4 hours of labor, that comes to about $75 to $100.
And each tape has to go through that same process?
It depends upon the rate of deterioration. That's only 50% of what we pull out and review now. So 50% is, it's okay. You know, some of the materials that have been reviewed constantly, the classics that you've heard on the radio, the Malcolm X's, the James Baldwin's, the things that the stations have used over and over again, those materials are fine. You know, the most significant materials we feel are okay because they've been listened to, they've been reviewed, and they've been taken care of. Luckily, with the help of David Adelson, we've gotten a recent donation to buy equipment to further the digitization process, so we can digitize things as soon as they're reviewed rather than having to wait until somebody calls and asks for it.
You find that deterioration is a factor of time. The older the tapes, the more the deterioration?
Again, not necessarily. It's the tape stock itself.
Okay.
The acetate tape is the older material, which is from the 50s. In the 70s is when they changed over to Mylar, which they thought was better, but in hindsight, it's actually worse than the original acetate. So some of the newer materials are in worse shape or in worse jeopardy than the older materials.
Madam Chairperson, it seems to me that at some point the board has to adopt a strategy,
yes,
which includes budget.
Right. That's why exactly why we wanted this on the agenda.
We will get that.
Well, we don't know yet. We don't know where it's going to fit in exactly, but the first step was to just call our attention, you know, to make sure that the board is aware that both that there's this tremendous resource, not just for us, but for the whole country, and the tremendous financial challenge to get the resources together to do that preservation and to then make it available to people, promote it, make sure the country knows that these resources are available.
Pete
has a question also.
In order to even get grants, we have to have a minimum kind of staff on this, so we ought to put this on the agenda at some point to try to deal with that so that at least that process can be taken care of. I know it's tough with this budget as it is, but it seems to me that DOC has ought to be, I'm sure we agree, a very, very high priority to preserve all this great history. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. That's a very good report.
Very
good report. I have two questions. One is, in your report, you mentioned that there's been encouragement from various areas to have a regular broadcast. Can you go into a little bit of detail on that? And can you explain some of the successes on the National Day of programming and how maybe we can look to maybe do that in the future?
Sure. The National Day of Fundraising was really special to the archives because not only did we put in offer clips, little two-minute clips between the transitions from station to station that just sort of highlighted the voices of Pacifica, but I was on the air with Amy Goodman, again with John Beaupre and Stephen Starr, and I think again in the evening with Jay Kugelman, doing online searches on the fly of the catalog database. So the encouragement sort of came from that one day on-air presence, and the archives really hasn't had that before. And from that, the feeling was that the archives should be on-air a little bit more. It could provide, programming and also highlight the history that Pacifica is.
You have mentioned that I believe that there was a 22% cut.
32.5%.
Okay. Is it your position that these cuts have aggravated the situation to the point where unless some of it is restored, it might be too late, that some of the material could be lost?
If you're speaking about the staff loss, the 32.5% cut is in staffing only. Overall, the budget cut is about 14%, but the staffing is really a critical point that the 32.5% is what that pertains to. Now we just recently lost those people since December, and they were from voluntary resignations or voluntary terminations. So that was the cataloger and a business manager. The cataloger is the critical, very critical person in the archive, because that's the person that has listened to more than 1,500 tapes in the past 2 years, identifying, cataloging them, and making sure that they're available. And so that is a critical position that must be restored.
The question I'm asking really is it your position that unless something is done immediately, that important material would be immediately lost and not be available?
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot say that if we don't do anything, if we wait a year, I cannot say that we will not use a valuable piece. And that's because we have tapes that are unidentified. We don't know what it is. We may have the tape of a century. We don't know.
Okay, again, I want to see if we can stop this discussion now and pick it up again tomorrow when we actually will be at the archives and Brian and the rest of the staff will be there. We'll get to talk to them and push this discussion further and push ourselves further to figure out how we're going to meet this challenge.
Yeah.
Very, very critical. I really want to thank you, Teresa. One more, hold on.
I just want the answer to that question I asked earlier about the people in the vault.
That question. Yes, it is true. When Holloway, the accounting firm, was at the finance office, and this is when they were introduced to us as an auditing firm, we did find out on a Monday when we found out that the refrigerator where the physical tape stock is, the door was unlocked. When we asked, we were told that two of the Holloway auditors were in the archive. What their intention, I cannot say for sure what it was, but I don't know why an auditor at the finance office was going into the refrigerator. What we heard was that once they saw the volume of materials, once they saw the sheer weight of the materials, they knew that it could not be shipped to Washington.
Again, I hope this is okay with Brian and the rest of the staff. People who haven't been there should make it their business to go visit.
Yeah,
check it out.
Everybody.
I think it's really incredible.
Thank you.
And again, we really want to encourage the station programmers and management to think about using these tapes and these resources.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, thanks, Brian. This will certainly be continued tomorrow and in the future. We want to move now. We're running a little late, but that's okay. We started a little late. To community comment. If people hadn't signed up yet, with Marty over here. Marty, you want to just stand up? I think there may still be some time. I don't have the list, though. I don't know how many people have signed up. What I want to remind people is that tomorrow when we begin, and we will begin on time tomorrow. We started a little late tonight, but we will begin on time tomorrow. We are doing a live radio broadcast of this meeting as well as the webcast, and we also have a very, very big agenda tomorrow. So we will be starting on time. The first item on the agenda tomorrow, actually all morning, will be spent in reports and discussion about the five stations. But we're going to start with KPFK. And in the morning tomorrow, we'll begin with a report from the station manager, from the acting station manager, from the lab chair, and then open it up to community comments. What I would like to ask for this evening, if there are people who are not from Los Angeles, who are not going to address KPFK issues, to let them have the first crack at the mic. Because there will be a lot of time tomorrow for Los Angeles folks. I also want to say, though, that if there are some folks in Los Angeles who aren't going to be able to be here tomorrow and really need to make their comments tonight, we want to hear those as well. So hopefully we'll get that balance. Now, I have a list in front of me, and it's about a dozen people. Two are not KPFK folks. But that's okay. So let me first call the non-Southern California people. The first one is David Moore from Montana, who I assume will introduce himself.
Thank you. I'm David Moore. I'm delighted to just take a very short amount of time. I think my suggestions are going to go towards that wonderful mission commission, which Dan announced. For more introduction, I'm the son of Lou Hill and other. That's a wonderful comment on how much we feel about his principles, and that's precisely what I wanted to offer, is three points that perhaps a mission commission can investigate nationwide. I was going to bring up that same notion of a national town meeting, perhaps broadcast. The first point would be a return, an investigation of the Pacifica principles towards the very urgency of not allowing a corporate takeover to happen again. And in that light, I think this might be just a quick moment for all of us to thank this leadership who is sitting here for their remarkable navigation of these waters. these people are sacrificing financially. I was stunned to see the salary cuts as well as everything else. I mean, what other organization could make such a claim? That's a large dialogue. I'd like to bring up another quick topic for long-range discussion, which is a revisitation of what Pacifica Community means in light of the new technology of satellite radio and internet streaming. This is a technical issue, and indeed all of these issues that will come into bylaws and constitutional detail. But that I'm listening to KPFA from Montana, and that stream is a lifeline, and we may be having community members in Thailand pretty soon. Perhaps we do not. And those questions of a global signal are remarkably important. Along the lines of that first issue also, there's a question of how not only to educate the populace on the founding principles of Pacifica, which are not only something from the past, but perhaps more radical than we've ever lived up to. What does it mean to have pacifist dialogue within the broadcasting form and also within the staffing and management of the organization? I think that process can perhaps allay future crises of this magnitude. And I'm really grateful for this moment and look forward to lots of conversations. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to call on Andrea Fishman. Andrea Fishman from the New York listening area.
I would just like to ask about the five resolutions that the listener on democracy that the listeners presented from the floor that the board was going to discuss. I just would like to know what they're not on this agenda, so I wanted to know what happened to them.
I don't know.
Can you be more specific?
Yes, we read five resolutions on the floor in January to the board, and we gave you text on all of them.
I believe, I don't have that right in front of me. My recollection was that those spoke to issues of the democratizing the governance structure.
Right.
What I believe is, what we're trying to do this weekend is set up processes so that exactly those kinds of issues and other issues that people have can be heard in an organized way and debated and discussed, not by a handful of board members, but by listeners and producers and lab members in the five listening areas. And that's where those issues really need to be addressed. And they haven't been lost, they haven't been forgotten. They're not on the agenda that you see before you, because the agenda is about setting up a process to make sure that there's not just token reference to those kinds of points, but thorough discussion and evaluation and dialogue and debate.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let me move into some of the L.A. folks. Michael Zinza. Zinzin, sorry. Yeah, I see there are a few other people not from L.A., but let me take a few L.A. folks, and then we'll take some of them on. Michael Zinza. Sorry if I mispronounced names, folks. Thank you. And again, if people could just step up to the mic and introduce themselves, that'd be great.
Right. My name is Michael Zinzin. I'm with the Coalition Against Police Abuse, and I'm also on the local lab. This is one area that I wanted to put on your minds, and that is the to appeal to you for support for development of local mini stations or remotes. We think that this is very critical, particularly in L.A., with the traffic and geographic makeup of L.A., and the fact that our station here is in North Hollywood. It makes it very difficult for us to draw support, physical support, and the building of networks throughout the rest of Los Angeles area, whether it be in the Chicano communities, the black communities, Asian communities, and so on. And so we really want to try to get some support, not only for setting it up, but the fact that we still need equipment, and it's in the initial stages. And if other people have ideas, we would welcome that input. But we do think that the Paul Robeson Center has made some, we've made some initial contacts with them, which is in South Central LA, and our hope is that we will be able to begin putting together one of the first remote or mini stations, which would directly feed both tape and live programming, and where we will actually fit in and have people from the communities not only get the give input, but also to build the networks in those communities, which we think is really important and has been lacking for a long, long time. We also would like for you to understand that this is not just for the LA area, but any area that has geographical problems or difficulty in reaching out to the various communities, Native Americans, Black, and so on, that they be encouraged to set this up as well throughout anywhere in this country that this difficulty may lie. And we really appeal to you to think about it. Give us some support. Give us your blessings, if you will. The point is that we need to let everybody know that this is something on the drawing board. If people have had these ideas in the past, we want them to step up. We want everyone to show that the new Pacifica will be bringing in all the ideas that have been sitting around or any new ideas that are coming to the table that will be looked at and activated or moved on in some shape or form. And we think that this new direction can only be realized when we put our theory into practice. And I think that's going to be very, very critical to bring in whole new layers of people. And with that, I say, please think about it and really get behind us. And we want to look towards the future. Thank you for listening. Forward ever, backwards ever. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Chair, please.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. I just want to call on the next three people, so people can line up. Joanne, now let's just get the comments. Let's just get the comments from folks, and then at the end, people can make any responses. Joanne Salinga, Joe Linton, and Harriet Harinow. Joanne.
Joanne Saliba, former president of the Community Action Board for the City of Los Angeles, and welcome you to Los Angeles. I'm really honored to be part of this August group of Pacifica listeners. It's very exciting. This is a new day for all of us, and we know what struggle and hard work you all did, and we just appreciate that, obviously, hearing that tonight. I just want to add my voice to the last speaker who said it so articulately that Los Angeles is really looking for those diverse voices that we've been missing for so many years and during this long struggle. This is a great time to start reclaiming those, and we're looking forward to all of the work that is still to be done, that's been put up tonight, and we're really excited about continuing this struggle. Thank you very much for all of your work. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe? Yes.
Hi, my name is Joe Linton, and I'm from an intentional community called Los Angeles Eco Village that's directly adjacent here on the other side of First Street. And I just want to let people know, welcome aboard and the great work you guys are doing, and to say that we did prepare some handouts on local restaurants and how to get there and what's vegan and what's affordable and how to take the bus to get there. And if there's folks from out of town who need a sofa to crash on instead, see me, because we've got rooms, and anybody who needs that, see me.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we have Harriet next.
Hello, my name is Harriet Arano, and I have 2 points to make. The first one, I'm speaking on behalf of the Hollywood Echo Park chapter of the Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network. And throughout this weekend, you'll be hearing other members of our group that we met and had some consensus points. And that first point is we all loved the nationwide, stationwide programming on the one-day fundraiser for the KPFK transmitter. We felt an overwhelming connection to other Pacifica communities and wish to thank all of the stations and their listeners for supporting the KPFK transmitter and us. We would like to urge the board and the executive director to schedule regular, periodic, nationwide programming days, sometimes to do national barn raising for a station or to pay back debt or to raise funds for national functions, but other times just for unity building. So that's the first point. And the second point is my own personal point, and that is I'd like to propose to the Pacifica National Board that there be a sanctioned United Listeners of Pacifica kind of organization. The goal of this group would be to promote and organize the voice and input of listeners. And while officially outside the organizational structure of Pacifica, the organization would derive some funding from memberships to Pacifica stations. In one respect, this is opening the stations to and general managers and the national board to a risk. The listeners' union would also be dependent on Pacifica, more members and more support of the voice of listeners. Like the shantymen in the days of Tall Ships, whose salaries are paid half from the bosses and half from the sailors, you know, that they wouldn't sing too fast or too slow. So I'd like to see a role for the listeners. Any member would be, any subscriber would automatically become a member of the United Listeners. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I want to call on Ian Barr, if I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, from KPFA, and David Combs from WBAI, and then Eve Mosier from WBAI.
Thank you. My name is Ian Bowe from Berkeley. One of the pleasures of my life was to get to know and become a friend of David Moore and of his mother, Eleanor McKinney, and one of his fathers, Dick Moore. And that brings me to the question of the archives again. Oh, thank you, Rashida. I think I speak as a historian here. It's absolutely urgent, it seems to me, if we take seriously Dan Coughlin's request to explain how we got into this mess, we really do need to attend to our history. That is to say, one of the things that the usurpers were intent on doing, of course, was to decapitate the institutional memory. We are lucky. We are lucky on our historians. And many of you know who they are. Matthew Lazar, who's here. Jeff Land, who isn't, John Downing, John Whiting, and others. Hocken Ewan's extraordinary archive gathered up in Berkeley, a unique archive of the free speech movement. This somehow ought to be drawn in some kind of correspondence with the archives. The thing that seems to be missing, I'm going to finish on this, is that there are thousands of people who, out of sadness or disgust, have turned away from Pacifica over the recent period and insist on asking the question, exactly as Dan said, how did we get into this mess? And we actually don't have a very good answer, partly because one of the narratives is that it all began in 1998. Well, this is a nonsense. So what I urge is that one of the things we do this weekend, thank you, one of the things we do this weekend is to talk amongst ourselves to try to recover the black hole where Matthew and Jeff leave off in the 70s. What happened between the mid-late 70s and 1998? We need to understand that in order to say to people, young people who we want to draw in, and to all those who have turned away, this is how it happened. We must not let it happen again. Let's get down to work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm David Combs. I'll talk faster than I usually do even, because I got very little time. First of all, the FSRN, the Free Speech Radio News, I'm just going to give you a personal reaction to it. It sounds, the information may be quite different, but it sounds too corporate to me. I would like them to all learn at the feet of Robert Knight, those who know who he is. He's very irreverent and wonderful, and I would like him to be on there, but he says no, he can't be running the thing, but it's got to be more fun to listen to than it is. Okay? Number two, hotline numbers. We have the Concerned Friends for WBAI, all this, us dissidents. You know, when they took over the station, you have to announce, it may happen, they're plotting today to knock it out. The FCC is run by right-wing Republican. We can lose the state, this whole network, tomorrow, doors locked. We have to announce, please, board, make it a requirement that they announce the hotline numbers, websites and stuff, so in case it does happen, we have ways to get together. Number two, three rather, one quick one, a course on ethics. This is a good one. Are we on the air? Oh, okay. A course on ethics. We need a course on ethics, the call-in seminar on ethics run by the stations. Example, you're at your home asleep, the burglar alarm goes off. You grab your shotgun, you go out, and there's a guy with your TV set about to walk out the door. You say, stop. He says, screw you, it's mine. You say, stop. What do? Different commissions. You're black, he's white, he's black, you're white. You've got terminal cancer and dying in 2 months. All this stuff. What's he stealing? A fancy big TV that the whole neighborhood watches at your house. They don't have TVs. They have to come to your house to watch the thing. What do you do? It's very apropos to the situation, and it shows how needed such a course is on the network.
Oh, that's right. Okay, Eve. Eve, yes, you're next. Yeah, I just want to encourage people again to try and keep their comments short. That way we have more time for more people.
My name is Eve Moser. Just,
yes, you are.
I'm here from New York. If I were home, I'd be glued to the radio, and I'm thinking about all the people who are at home everywhere around in all the areas and who I might be glued to their radios. And I'm wondering, are they hearing this? Is every station broadcasting full from start to finish? And if not, why not? And what is this board going to do about that?
Let me just quickly answer that. No, not every station. This actually, tonight's session is not being broadcast via radio. The entire meeting is being webcast. The broadcast, radio broadcast, will be, I believe, all day tomorrow and on Sunday. The decision about what to carry, how much to carry, what hours to carry, in fact, was not a board decision. The board decision was to make sure that all this was available. The stations, you really need to talk to each of the stations and the managers and the program directors. Those are the people that make those decisions. We are committed to an open process and to making sure that when the stations want to carry these kinds of meetings and put them on the airwaves, that we don't put up any obstacles, that we make that possible, right? But really, programming decisions are in the hands of the local program directors and station managers. Okay, we need to go on.
Point of information, it is being broadcast on some radios nationally that pick up the stream of WBIS.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you. All right, let's go back to the list here. Jay Rubin, Randy Rock, and Uncle Bo.
Thank you, Jerry Rubin, Alliance for Survival, longtime KPFK supporter, and welcome all you people from out of town. And listen to the great archivist and hearing all these wonderful progressive names. I had to get a little bit of a chuckle when I heard Dr. Edward Teller, though. I guess that shows our diversity. The father of the hydrogen bomb in the archives on KPFK. When you go and visit tomorrow, just make sure that that tape is not glowing in the dark. It seems like it's more appropriate for the archives of a Rush Limbaugh station. Anyhow, I just want to thank all of you. Whether people are getting education to grow personally or politically, you get it on KPFK. I want to urge everybody that's listening to double and triple their contribution now. I can't say it any... our wedding anniversary is coming up, and we want to give a wedding anniversary gift to KPFK, my wife Marissa and myself. One suggestion. And by the way, I want to thank the news department for getting out more to cover the community news events again. It's sorely missing, and it's really helpful at KPFK. I would like to see KPFK sponsor at least a couple of times a year town hall forums, not only on the air, but in the community, to help build coalitions, to help organize on women's issues, on peace issues, on environmental issues and human rights issues, because that is really what the station is all about, how we are going to make a better world, how we're going to become educated to become active to change things. And with the way the situation is now, I can't think of anything more important to be part of the KPFK and the whole Pacifica mission. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Randy.
Again, my name is Randy Rock, and I'm probably just, hopefully not, but the solo contingent from the Orange Curtain, Orange County. I live in the city of Tustin. Orange County is changing, everyone. Orange County is changing. Now, the question, two concepts I have, and I think that's where pivotal, that Pacifica can make a difference in the change of Orange County. A lot, I have mentioned some ideas to Pacifica. I send emails, I send letters, and I understand you guys have got to get the most pivotal stories on the program. But there's got to be a correspondence to know your story is important. We can't get to you now. It seems to die. You give it, and it just goes into the abyss because of other concerns. And something needs to be established so that there is a communication to say, can't get to it now, or something so that, you know, we've recognized you. The other thing is, where I work at UCI, there, you know, Christopher Cox is running as a Republican candidate, and I'm going to be helping John Graham, who is the Democrat. Not asking for your support of the Democrat, what I'm asking is that there's got to be, I mean, to incorporate what he was talking about, an avenue for a debate that I've heard from your programs in the past for open forum. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Uncle Bo. Okay.
Hey, Uncle Bo.
All right.
In the interest of time, Dan covered that. It's imperative to ferret out well-entrenched or incubating pockets of cronyism wherever. Everyone is suspect among national boards, labs, station employees, exposed secret agendas. Speaking specifically to the monies accrued especially for the transmitter Save Our Signal Day, this needs multiple oversight of the account. Who's handling the purse strings there? I heard that from a listener that there was jazz played on Washington's segment. No more tepid Pacifica, please. I would like to see a conduit set up. No. Anyway, we need events in the entertainment industry for benefits to take down the debt. As for programming, I'll put my suggestions in writing. I encourage increased local programming than national, more archive programming, and phone call-ins to be part of the majority of discussion format programs. Open the phone lines. Keep them open.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I want to call on Adrian Labby from KPFA in Berkeley, and then Dina Colbert from New York. Adrian.
I'm Adrian Labby from KPFA, listening area. We have a resolution on our KPFA listeners table for our listener organizers, which would ask that each station, when they send out pieces of mail to subscribers, have a dollar checkoff to pay listener organizers. I'm thrilled to see the Free Speech Radio News Stringer Strike resolution may be settled. They are remarkable individuals, and their effort the last 3 years has been incredible. KPFK is the only station currently broadcasting a disability program in the Pacifica Network, and access is unlimited is a half an hour a week. I'm going to be working with Harry Schlutke tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 to present a workshop for anyone who's interested, especially those of you with disabilities. slice of the pie, or carrot in the stew. Organizing and programming to include people living with disabilities. 3:30 in the classroom in this room.